I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Coming up on today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Monday, May 29th, 2023 Memorial Day edition here on the program. We've got a really fun show for you. We've got sports reporters who have indeed reassembled. I sat on this one for a day. We taped it on Sunday morning, but everything's still topical as Celtics Heat Game 7 happens this evening. Really excited about that. But we spent a lot of time talking Celtics Heat, even some air Michael Jordan takes on that biopic. So a little movie talk there early on as well. But we had the Daily Beast's Robert Silverman, AL.com's Andrew Hammond, and special guests who popped in for a little bit of time, Defector's David Roth. So it was a jam-packed, fun show for you guys, how the Heat are kind of like Bill Belichick, late-stage Bill Belichick, post-Tom Brady Bill Belichick, and Jimmy Butler in the same way. A little Wichita. Yeah, you never knew you'd get that with the biggest stories this week on Sports Reporters. Talk about the Suns, Kevin Durant, little Mets and DeGrom. If the Commanders, the Washington Commanders, are going to have to change their name again, and why they probably should, because, look, it's early, get out, all that kind of stuff. It's just, who cares? Who's buying the Commander stuff already in the last year? It's all right to get out and admit you made a mistake. And just Red Wolves, Red Tails, there's all kinds of other great options that they can and should do. So hopefully that happens. The Jets logo and some other NFL logos. We talked a lot about uniforms and logos. We wrapped up here on this very program. So all over the place, but a lot of fun, as always, here on the Sports Reporters who have indeed reassembled. Don't forget, folks, you can watch this very program. We're over there on YouTube as we just about hit the 1,000 mark for subscribers. So very close, and should hit that by the end of the day. So if you have not already, make sure you go to youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast, or just do youtube.com/Chase Thomas Podcast, like and subscribe, and make sure that you never miss any of my video content, clips, shorts, all that kind of stuff over there on the YouTube page. If you have any sports questions for Robert, Andrew, or myself on our Sunday morning show here, please, please, please tweet at us at Bob Saeta, or Aham ALDC, or myself, Chase_Thomas, or the podcast page at Pod Chase Thomas as well. You can also email us at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. So we'd be happy to hear from you, what you like about the show, any questions for us, anything like that. Feel free to reach out, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. We're on all the main socials at Chase Thomas Podcast, so check us out there. And of course, if you're already a subscriber, first, thank you. But if you have not already, please leave a 5-star rating and a review why you like the show, why you tune in each and every day, and why other people should tune in as well. That'd be great on your preferred podcast player. And if you're not already subscribed, first, welcome. And thank you for checking out the program. Every single Sunday morning, we tape sports reporters who have indeed reassembled here on the program. So look out for that in your feed normally every Sunday morning. So all that good stuff, and go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any of my daily content here, covering all things sports as the sports renaissance man. All right, there we go. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Sports reporters assemble!
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The sports reporters, we have indeed reassembled here on this Sunday morning. Bob's got his routine now. Bob's a dancer. Let me get started here. Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast up there in New York City. Robert, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Still just kind of parsing through what happened last night in Celtics Heat, which we
What happened last night?
I would like the record to show on this very program as Andrew Hammond of AL.com, sports editor, freshly in Birmingham, joined us in the South. So excited about that. But I am one of the only three sports reporters on this very call right now who has said for weeks that the Celts were winning the NBA title and were coming back in this series. Last week, I got a lot of heat where I was like, nah,
no pun intended.
Yeah, we'll eat some crow here. It's not over yet, but we'll, you know, go ahead, do a victory lap, man. Do your thing. Go, run.
The Celts are going to do it, and they're going to win the title. Like, this is the worst case scenario for the Nuggets, too, because I think they would run through this exhausted Miami Heat team and with what they'd be able to throw at Jimmy and company. Like, there's no, I feel bad because Jason Tatum has reached another level. And what he was doing in the first three quarters in games six here, just he hit some crazy, crazy tough shots. And he also, what I like about Jason Tatum is there aren't many guys who shoot and play like Jason Tatum anymore. Like, there's a lot of stuff. He sometimes takes too many threes, but by and large, he takes these ridiculous turnaround, long mid-range shots with Jimmy's hand just right in his face, and he's hitting it. And it's just, Jason Tatum's a lot of fun. Jaylen Brown can't dribble. Like, it's amazing that that doesn't cost the Celtics more, because that man lost two just that I had jotted down in this game where I'm like, I don't understand why he's so good at everything else, but the man cannot.
I can see Andrew gearing up for a take. He's gearing. Yeah. He's like a boxer in his corner.
He's just ready to come out once the bell hits. I'm just taking everything in, and then when the time is ready.
I can feel your vibes.
Jason Tatum's the best player remaining in the playoffs. Like, he's the best player remaining. He's the best player remaining. He does everything. East? He's guarding Jimmy.
He's the best player remaining in the East?
No. Look, man, always go wings, because guess
right
what?
Right now, Nikola Jokic is somewhere in a bespoke you're talking to horses.
Mm-hmm.
And he's bored.
Doing
he's
fine.
Bored with talking to the horses right now.
Right.
It's fine. No. I love Jokic. I will always err on the side of wings. Elite two-way wings are the most important.
Wait.
So this is
bone-in or bone-out wings?
Yeah, huh? He's...
Bone-in or bone-out wing?
I am definitely a bone-in wing.
Okay, he's good. Feeling, Chase is feeling himself because his improbable, stubborn take is proving to have legs. And so now he's saying Jason Tatum is the best player remaining in the playoffs, which is...
Bob?
There aren't a lot of guys who could bring their team back in the way that Jason Tatum has over the last three games.
I'm ready for the bell to ring.
Yeah. Ding, ding, go.
Okay, so here's the thing. Sorry to interrupt, Chase.
No, you're good. This is your team.
Here's where I'm at right now. Last week when they were, I think, were they down 2-0 or were they down 3-2? Or down 3-0?
They were down 3-1 as of Sunday. I forget when game four was.
Yeah, these games blend together. Because last night was game six, and it was Thursday.
No, it was game two. It was game two where I was convinced. I was like, yeah, this series is over. Because, I mean, if you look at – in hell, Mazzulla almost cost them last night.
He really did. That was amazing.
which I guess here's my thing. I feel like if it was like in the old –
He did almost cost them last night, but the referees botched the clock and gave them – 3 seconds instead of the 2-5 that they should have had. Yeah. So that challenge did help there.
Do you remember
Odds are the answer is no, but go for it.
It was the 2015, I don't know if it was, it might have been the Eastern Semis or something between Chicago and Cleveland. And there was a point where David Blatt was about to make, he was about to call a timeout or something. And Ty Lue basically like had to grab him and put him on, yes, back on the bench.
Yes, I remember that.
That's how it feels watching Missoula sometimes. It's like you just want to grab him and throw him on the bench and say, hey, you, stay here. Do not do anything. Look.
I enjoyed Joe Mazzulla's story about the dying child this week. That was a real high point for me.
Bob, why?
Yeah.
Why are you like this? Anyway.
Remember things. I'm sorry.
Thanks, bud. Here's everybody wants to know, what's Andrew thinking? What's Andrew thinking?
The world needs to know. That's my terrible imitation of Benedict Cumberbatch doing an imitation of Julian Assange in the WikiLeaks movie. There's one point he goes, he's doing this South African sort of accent the whole time.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
What movie is this?
At one point, it's called The Fifth Estate. It's called The Fifth Estate. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch, and it's a movie about WikiLeaks.
Huh.
And at one point, when they're trying to decide whether to put out, I forget whether it was the logs or something else, but Benedict Cumberbatch is screaming at Daniel Brühl, and he just goes, "The world needs to know."
David Roth of Defector, do you know this reference? Do you know what Bob's talking about right now?
No. But
welcome but, to the show.
But I think I have some sense that the show existed. I do know that there was, because there was a period of time when they were just making like kind of star-studded versions of things that had been in the news recently. And so like Ashton Kutcher played like Steve Jobs or something at one point, and they were just we're shooting it already, like get him out there.
About that movie, it's like if you look at it on paper, it's like an NBA roster. When you put the cast list out and you're like, oh, and then, and I feel like we hadn't been jaded on biopics just yet, and we're still kind of like, oh
yeah, you're like, I can see it.
Yeah, it's like, I can see that. Okay. You see some of the first stills of the movie coming out. You're like, this could be something. And then
Seth
you see
Rogen
it
as Steve Wozniak. Sure.
And then you see the movie and you're like, oh God.
Yeah. It's like, if you looked at a roster and it made sense, and then you watch the team play and you're like, they are really featuring Ricky Davis a lot, huh? Like, this is just not like, and I don't mind Kutcher as an actor. Like, I think if you use him in the right way, it's like the same way with like Tom Cruise, where like if you just have him run in a straight line, he rules. But as soon as you ask him to like try to convey a complicated human emotion, you're kind of like, oh, he's never felt that. That's not going to work. Like, which is a challenge for some actors. I loved hearing Bobby's South African accent, though. That's a great way to start your day off. It's like, you know, that's the things I've done today is like a few push-ups, talked to my wife, made toast, and then I came out here and Bobby was talking like Joss Ackland in Lethal Weapon 2, which is great. So is The Fifth Estate any good? Should I watch the
No, you don't. No, it's fine. It's a very Benedict Cumberbatch really just leaned into the weirdest parts of Assange's personality, so it's fun for that. But aside from that, it's a replacement level Kutcher's Steve Jobs biopic movie.
As important a person as Julian Assange, I guess, has been in the last 10, 15 years of American history, he was never a guy where I was like, I need more of that. Like, I need like a couple of hours just to hang out with this guy and get to know him. What makes him tick?
Is this a strong take? But like when Air was coming out, and I'm like, I love Damon and Affleck. I enjoy their movies. I went and saw Ben Affleck's latest just very C-minus movie from a couple weeks ago in theaters. We were the only one there. Hypnotic, I believe is what it was called. Because wow. My wife and I have the Regal Unlimited. So we get to go, like, if it, you go more than once, it pays for itself. So we have it in more of a... Eat. Yeah, we have more of a reason to go to these movies that we would never pay for otherwise. So it's like, it's a free, like, why not just jump in there? It's not great. So just don't waste your time. But that all being said, when I saw Air, I was like, I'm good on the Jordan stuff. I don't need to know how that all worked. I'm okay.
Preaching to the choir here.
I
like how we've downshifted from biopics about relatively famous people to just cutting out the human middleman and going straight to a biopic of the product itself.
Right. Like, like the Skittles origin story.
Yeah.
But the Jordan stuff to me, like, I mean, this is like the dumbest possible way to get to this opinion, which is maybe a dumb opinion on its merits. But like, I got sick of Jordan while he was playing because he kept beating the New Jersey Nets. And I was like 12 years old. And that really made me mad. Mm. And so there was like, I had a limited, even for the ESPN documentary that I'm forgetting that aired during the pandemic. And that was like the lifeline for, I reviewed that for New York Magazine. So like it helped me pay my rent. And it was also like, you know, it was the only new content that anybody saw for, you know, 6 months. Mm. And I wound up liking it more than I sort of thought I would. I just don't find, I mean, Jordan was an amazingly compelling player, but like the broader story around him is like, it's pretty linear, you know, that like, and then the parts of it that are most interesting are the parts that we're never going to find out the truth about. I mean, in terms of gambling and the, you know, some of the personal stuff, and that's fine. I don't need to know all of that. I have my coworker Israel is like our movie critic guy when he, you know, decides to do it. And he went to go see Air and described the experience in like more or less the way that I think it would hit for me. Which was that, like, he kind of liked it because it was just like a movie where a bunch of like grown-ups who were played by good actors like talk to each other. You know, that there was like, that just wasn't a whole lot else.
With them. It was like you're watching a podcast, like with all your favorite people. You're doing a live pod and, on Jordan.
Yeah. And that seems like kind of it's like more rare at this point. So it like winds up being elevated in value just by dint of its existence, whether it's actually like any good or not, kind of winds up being immaterial to it. Did you like, so beyond the fact that you don't care about the sneakers, was it like fun to watch Chris Messina yell at people? Like, because I feel like that's like borderline enough to like not get me in the theater, but like I'll certainly watch it.
He definitely did David Falk. And so I've like done stuff on, like, I did like, you know, like projects in high school and some in college on like just like on Michael Jordan and just the brand and all of that. And just kind of like reading on David Falk, I'm like, this guy seems like, it's like he's hiding his true self in terms of just kind of like how he operates and all that. He wants to put, it's like he wants to kind of stay to the side a little bit. But yeah, no, Chris Messina did it perfectly, I think, in terms of just like, no, make this guy the prototypical 1980s agent. Like, just please.
Yeah.
And he nailed it.
And I feel like that could be fun just from a like how wide the lapels on his suit are, you know, that like you can like the production aspects of it could make it more fun maybe than like any writing element is going to, because at some point it's still guys negotiating a contract, you know. But
right,
Roth, would you believe that we started this conversation with Celtics Heat right before you got on?
I figured it's like I'm a little late, as is my custom, but I did not expect to already be joining the show during the part where Bob is doing accents. You know,
like he was begging me to give him his hot take, and I don't know if it's a hot take, but I look at this series and. If they get it to six, I'm fine. I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they're at seven, I'm even more of a basket case than I was at the beginning of the series, because I knew, oh, great. Spo figures out the Celtics. You could put Red Auerbach out there and he would figure out the Celtics. You know, that's just, he's just that good in terms of game planning and scheming. For what Miami has done in the last two games, I'm as confused as anybody. Because, you know, you see, you know, and a different sport, but Red Sox coming back from 3-0, you know, the Cavs coming back from 3-1. there was always an element that was there in terms of, okay, this set of circumstances happened, that set of circumstances happening. I don't see what the overwhelming circumstances are in terms of just how Boston is getting back into the series.
You mean like what changed? So I agree with that. And it actually, I've decided to like let go of this aspect of it, because like I want to believe that I'm a smart basketball. I mean, Lord knows I've watched 10,000 hours of it in my life. Like, I should know what's going on. It's like a different team showed up.
Yeah.
Like, they were so checked out. It was first three games. Like, this is already like on the podcast from last week. Like, Drew and I were talking about it. I was like, these guys want to go home and like look at Instagram.
It was Cancun on three. Game two was Cancun on three.
Yeah. And that is like, and then, I mean, they're a much better team. Like, again, but again, as you were saying, you can't like read the roster and be like, the Ashton Kutcher movie won the Academy Award for Best Picture. You know, like, this is, they played like, that was some real Kutcher-y basketball the first three games. And I think they more or less got the Heat's best shot last night, give or take. I mean, like, Butler and Adebayo were bad, like actively bad until the last 10 minutes of the game. But it's all the role players were like at that level they were at in the first three games of the series, you know, where they're just like Duncan Robinson and Gabe Vincent and Max Strus are like playing at 125%, you know, outcomes. I wouldn't totally rule things out, but it is hard to like flip your perspective as a fan after you watch three games, you come to a conclusion that makes sense based on those three games, and then you just have to throw that in the garbage and start all over again. And that's kind of hard. I've had a hard time with it.
Duncan Robinson's going to be forgotten about, those two just wide open threes in this brutal game. Like, that's going to be lost in time, but I cannot believe that he missed both. Like, that was just something you jot down, and you're like, the odds of him missing two just wide open clean looks, that obviously with how the game ended up, that would have, the Heat would have won just there.
I mean, he had some incredible contested ones, like far out contested ones before that too. So it was, I mean, whatever, basketball's really hard. Like, that was, it was just, I couldn't believe the second one. We missed the first one. I was like, all right, fine. Like, maybe he was too open, you know, but then, the rest of it was.
Imagine like Joey Maz, like because he watches The Town four times a week. I wonder now with Brogdon not being available and them clearly being better with Derek White gobbling up all of those minutes, that he's just going to like call Jeremy Renner's character from The Town and be like, I need you to finish the job on the forearm. I need you to go ahead and crack that forearm altogether, because Malcolm Brogdon cannot play under any circumstances in game seven. We found our group. And then there's like the Heat on the flip side, because remember at the beginning of the series, like, oh, Tyler Herro not playing, it's actually good for Miami. Yeah. And then they need offense late in the last couple of games. You're like, wow, they're really, is that a Highsmith? Who is a Highsmith? Is that an actual basketball player at this point? Like, who are they trying to?
I don't even
like,
remember his college career. That's always my favorite. The guys that are rookies, and I'm just like, oh wow, played in the Conference USA, huh?
Omar Yurtseven. Come on down. You're getting, Cody Zeller is not holding up much to everyone's. I really hope we get some Joey Mazzulla motivational excellence.
No,
he just calls every single member of the 2003 Red Sox to just
swear to God,
Can Bronson Arroyo bring his guitar? Is what he should be asking right now.
Is Brady Little singing the national anthem before Game 7?
Yeah. Guys, I was already stressed out enough watching Game 7. Actually, I wasn't even watching Game 7 because
Game 6, 7.
I don't care.
He's already got the script, Bob. Andrew's already got the script for Game 7.
So I'm having to pay attention to Alabama softball and Alabama softball. So I'm like looking at the ESPN bottom line, and I see, okay, Celtics lead by 10 points, 4 minutes left, okay. And then my phone just started blowing up on the Jimmy Butler foul, and it's like, dog, like this. And I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, shit, let me turn to the game. Okay, fine. And I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, this is how they're going to do it. This is how they're going to do it. Wow. Okay, thanks. This is why I stayed away.
Yeah. What I meant by their best shot. Like, that run had the feeling of being, like, conclusive. You know, like, that was, like, a sort of pantheon Jimmy Butler. I'm not really into that sort of narrative stuff, but, like, it had that feeling.
Where is he on your pyramid, David?
Yeah. Where is he?
It felt like the 2013 Eastern Conference where you go to a game seven and – you know that if you cost them this game, then, you know, you've pretty much just thrown a monkey wrench into whatever future plans they had. And then Miami goes on that second half run and you're just like, here we go. Like, it, that's what was playing in my head. But then when Derek White just showed up and just tipped the ball, and I just said, no way. I just started laughing. I'm like, yeah.
I didn't think he got it off in real time. I don't know if y'all thought that, but I thought
I thought it was after the buzzer.
Right? Like, it's weird. And then when you showed the replay, it's like clear. It wasn't even close.
Who knows what that was about? Everybody, it's all fog of war stuff, but it definitely looked late, like given where the light was on the backboard. But then, it was like there's a second left and he touched it basically.
Isn't that crazy? Like from a distance, it looks like no way. Oh, that sucks even worse because it wasn't even close. And then bam, like I saw Shando Richardson of SI, covers the Heat. He had made a post about like the Bam Adebayo. And this is something because we're just going to analyze just what every player did in this moment to stop Derek White from that kind of tip in. And it was like Bam, if you watch it, he's going to box out at the free throw line. Like he just instinctively, because that is what you do. And like what Shando was talking about is like, he's so robotic and like, he's just such a smart basketball player that he didn't think in that moment, no, just go for the ball. Like, you're gigantic. Like, you need to just go get the ball. Don't worry about boxing out. I don't know if it was Jaylen. I think it was Jaylen Brown at the top of the key. And it's like, you went the wrong way. The ball's over there. Like, don't go that way. Like, this is the last play of the game. Just go gobble up three out and the game's over. Don't worry about boxing out.
If he'd missed long, Jason Tatum was barreling in from
the other side.
Rim. Yeah, the other side of the rim already.
Yeah, right,
everyone's Zapruder-ing the hell out of this final shot. And,
I know,
and drawing up diagrams about how Max Strus shouldn't have been, you know, doubling Marcus Smart.
Yeah,
in addition to it being that you get so few of these just back-breaking last second shots in a playoff game where it's a win or go home situation. That was delightfully enjoyable to me. The shot it reminded me of was the Derek Fisher shot in
San Antonio.
Against San Antonio. When he was just sort of curled out to launch a contested 20-footer that barely got out in time. But it was beautiful. And the other thing is all of the sports cliches that come tumbling out of players and coaches' mouths whenever they get down big in a series about, well, they better not let us get one. And, you know, we're going to take it one day at a time. And, you know, suddenly all of it, this is the place where all of those things suddenly ring true.
Mm.
That to me is just, I'm enjoying the hell out of it as much as my true rooting interest in this series is the hellmouth opening up on Boston Garden. That's both teams being
sort of where I am with
down.
It too.
Yeah.
Like two annoying franchises. So like something funny is going to happen that's bad to one of them.
Yes.
And I guess I have to
that.
Be okay with that.
I don't need that.
All right.
We've known each other for what? 10 minutes? I don't need that.
You seem like a nice guy. I can't be held accountable for what teams you cheer for. That's not my problem.
I decided to become a Celtics fan when I was 4, and I've regretted life ever since. I know. I get it. It's fine. Everything's fine. I just the whole heat culture.
They're incredibly annoying. I'm not going to rule
it out. It's so annoying. It's just like, wait, what's heat culture? Keeping Udonis Haslem out of retirement?
Yeah.
Because he just won't leave?
You're not a Celtics fan because you're like from New England then?
No.
The thing that I was thinking about with the Heat, and I guess I can make this comparison now because it won't be like salt in the wound for you.
Oh, not at all.
There's a real like Belichick feel to that roster to me now, like late Belichick. Where it's like you have this great coach who is great, and then Spo is not annoying in the way that Belichick is, and he's not like a creep in the way that Belichick is. But I feel like as a GM, Belichick has been trying to see how little talent he can win 10 games with for like a few years now. That's been like pretty clearly the gambit. Where he's like, I'm only drafting guys from Navy. I'm only drafting like people that played lacrosse in college.
Cole Strange, like, first round from UTC Chattanooga, baby.
Yeah, but he's making it hard for himself. Like, I mean, some of it is that, you know, it's hard to be a GM, but in this case, it's, you know, it's weird to hear like it keep getting mentioned that Duncan Robinson is, you know, wasn't drafted or any of that. Like, he's on his second contract, you know, like these guys are not new, but there are a lot of guys on that roster where I was like, what if you just replace them with like Bruce Brown? Or like just like one of these like sort of freely available but actively good NBA like mid-level type signings, and they don't do that. They like to go, you know, through the like G League Ignite roster and just grab a few guys and make it happen.
Hey, who was passing to Scoot Henderson the last 2 months? Yeah, get that guy. Yeah,
I like him. Like, wow, John Jenkins is back. Neat. That's cool. I love him.
John Jenkins. That man was a hooper at Vanderbilt.
He was
40% from three all the time.
He was on one of those teams. The like G League All Star teams are amazing rosters if you're like sort of on the problematic level of remembering guys where you just like it's like, and like SEC all second team dudes are just in your brain forever. Because the roster is like it's high school kids that are gonna get drafted, and then it's like 31-year-olds that played a little bit in the NBA and are there to like basically be the RA. So it's one of those teams had like Chase and Randall on it, or like like John Jenkins, like guys you sort of remember as like good college players and marginal NBA guys who presumably are just like, do not go to that club.
It
like,
reminds
like a bad thing's gonna happen to you in that club.
It reminds me, and maybe because I'm watching soccer and I was playing soccer last night, but it reminds me of like a second level English soccer team that's got like those one or two guys, but then it's the
some are on the way up, some are on the way down, and they're like briefly together on Luton Town or something like that.
You're just like, oh, that's but no, I can't stand the whole Heat culture gimmick, and it's just like, oh my. But yeah, on the flip side, it's Boston. We don't even have to go any further. Just Boston game seven. And I'm just like, I get it. I get why people who aren't fans of either team are going to be view both fan bases as insufferable. And I'm just like,
Well, I think it's also the Jimmy Butler effect too. Did y'all listen to Jeff Teague talk about Jimmy and the infamous Minnesota Timberwolves practice?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what he said, who he preferred to play with in that practice?
Or it was like G League guys.
I think this is a Jimmy thing now more than anything. Like Jimmy's the ultimate Miami guy because Miami's like, we really love the G League. We love our John Jenkins types. And Jimmy's like, actually, that is who I only want to play with. So this is going to work out swimmingly because that's kind of my deal.
They're giving him a list of free agents, and he's like, not that guy, not that guy. Jimmy, we're on page three.
Right.
Oh, like, okay.
I'm only playing with guys on two-way contracts. That's my this is my rule. But
Jimmy would be the one star to think like that, where it's like
want it more. They've been through the grind and they know what it takes.
That's like he's like putting grind set principles into action. he's literally choosing like dinner with Jay-Z over $1 million, like as a roster construction move.
Do you think so? This is my question, and I think Chase, you said with the two-way contracts. Do you think that once Austin Reeves got out of his two-way contract and signed an actual contract with the Lakers, the next game, the next Heat-Lakers game, Jimmy Butler just looked at Austin Reeves and was like, man, what happened to you?
What happened? It used to be about the music.
What happened to you? You didn't used to be like this.
You sold out, man.
What is ruining you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I bet you went. You didn't go to Supercuts for that haircut, did you? I can tell. Yes.
All the shots of Austin Rivers at the podium, looking like a lesser known member of Jonathan Fire Eater, were also equally delightful for me.
Yep.
Like, another funny thing too, because he's like speaking to Ross point about
representation
like,
for me.
Yeah, the emo man, but like he was really good at Oklahoma. Like you just like anyone who watched college ball, you're like, no, he was actually pretty good. He was kind of like a Gordon Hayward in college. Like, I don't know why he went undrafted, but he wasn't on a national title team. But Austin Reeves actually was pretty solid.
If Greg Marshall wasn't a complete S-bag, he's staying at Wichita State. Like, if you look at, like, the guys that Greg Marshall ran off in, like, his last two seasons at Wichita State, you're just like, that's a Sweet 16 team right there.
I don't think I know very much. I mean, when they stopped being in the Sweet 16 every year, I was like delighted to be able to stop paying close attention to Greg Marshall. Who left? Did he like?
So
he was forced out.
Full disclosure. I'm from Wichita, Kansas, so like I like all of that. But like there were some. It was Reeves. There was a few other guys that had decent cups of coffee in the NBA, but then had transferred somewhere.
Which in
else.
That conference is like a lot to have around, and then that's
He, weird. Yeah.
To so it think was that the Charles P. Koch men's head basketball coach at Wichita State University. It might have been a turd, but what are you gonna do?
It's funny because like when I see Austin Reeves, I still think of the guy that like Austin Reeves, Ron Baker, like all of these guys. I'm like, I remember playing beer pong with them at the bar. not Austin Reeves, but Ron Baker.
Around too soon because he would have been a Heat Jimmy favorite.
Yeah.
That man just came around just a little bit too soon.
Not to bring this back to Knicks talk, but yeah. Ron Baker was briefly a cult favorite on some very bad Knicks teams.
And it made me so happy. I was like, Ron!
Before they were competitive, the Bing Bong culture had to just create its own heroes, and that's... Yeah. Like, Bob definitely wrote for me and then drew the art for a story about Alexei Shved when I was at Vice Sports. Like, stuff needed to at that. Also, like, they were just kind of letting me assign whatever, but it was like, it's a good story.
I was like, listen, Dave, I've been watching a lot of Russian dash cam car crash videos and the Knicks. And like, I think
say no more.
Can
I give you $250 for that story? Shved was like the ultimate example of that. Baker was like, I think actually probably did have a little bit of that sort of like Heat culture something. Like he was always really fit and he tried really hard. And like that just was, that team was a black hole and like nothing good was going to come out of it. But Baker was like on the Linsanity teams maybe, right?
No, he showed up
after.
He was the post.
Shved was though, wasn't he?
He was the post Mello, post Kristaps injury teams that were coached by David Fizdale when they were running Emmanuel Mudiay out at point guard to see if they could get him back to his. Yeah, see if he
was
could
the
get
fifth
him back
overall
his,
pick. You know,
yeah. The Knicks' operating strategy was, well, this guy was considered good by other franchises at one point.
Larry Brown, former Knicks coach, liked him. He was an SMU guy. Yeah.
I Emmanuel Mudiay and Jan Vesely are the two guys that I swore up and down. I was preaching the gospel and I was like, yep, these guys are going to be it. And after Mudiay, I'm just like, you know what? I've got to step back. And like when somebody's like, hey, what about this kid, Luka Doncic? I'm not teasing
it. Nobody knows anything. It would be irresponsible to speculate.
It's like I'm not going to do it. Yeah, but some of his highlights. No, I'm not going to do this to myself again. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, go ahead.
Oh
yeah,
no,
I was.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ron Baker. I think I forget where I was looking at Ron Baker's basketball reference page for the normal reasons that
as one does.
Yeah, you don't need to explain yourself here. It's all normal people on this call.
Yeah, and I think he's. In his post-career, he joined up with some kind of muscular Christianity, like
athletes in action type.
Yeah, but like a Division III athletes in action organization, and he's he's back in the Wichita area, sort of preaching that all things and the 12th man on a roster can be achieved through our faith in the Lord kind of thing at this point.
It's probably more fun than like whatever playing in Lithuania and not actually getting paid when you're supposed to get paid. But I'm sure there's nice stuff in Wichita, probably a reliable paycheck. It's a good place to start.
Hey, Wichita's got some pretty decent eateries. So,
I don't doubt it. Yeah,
shout out to Spangles. Great burger place.
There you go.
Name.
Bob, what do you think Phoenix is going to end up doing this summer?
The Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, what do you think the Phoenix Suns are going to do?
We were talking about Carrie Lake now and the ongoing electoral.
They're going to have a bunch of recount things. It's not going to come to anything.
5 seconds on that. The governor actual merch that she's rocking. What I saw. I don't know if that's legit, but if she's really wearing like the "I'm actually the governor" merch around is. A next level bonkers.
It's a like stunt on Carrie Lake to be like, I am democratically elected governor, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Sure.
You got to, they got a drop shipping organization for t-shirts. Like,
it's not great when the main character of your democratic society is the person that lost an election and won't go away. Like, we've got a little bit too much of that in the monitors just in general, I think. But anyway, so the Suns. they've fired Monty Williams. They haven't hired anybody, right? Or did they hire somebody?
They have Adrian not Griffin hired got one, hired they yesterday. I think it's going to be the associate coach. I think another Wichita guy, actually.
Yeah, Adrian Kevin Griffin, he got hired.
No, I'm saying Kevin Young. I think Kevin Young is the one who's the favorite right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
They're... what are the Suns going to do? I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a lot of material for them to upgrade the roster around the around Booker and Durant and DeAndre. I mean, unless they finally decide to pull the trigger and move DeAndre Ayton, there's just not a lot of flexibility there. And DeAndre Ayton to me is sad because he really does strike me as one of those. And this is a classic NBA archetype, incredibly talented big man who doesn't really seem to enjoy playing basketball that much for a living. But when you are handed a 9-figure check, there really is no actual choice in the matter. And I'm sure getting every last nerve ground down to the nub by CP3 glaring at him for not putting enough mustard on a kickout pass from the post hasn't helped improve his love of the game, but Monty Williams was and is an outstanding coach, and I think he'll land somewhere that's a better situation than.
I think everyone's closing up. I don't think he's a head coach anymore next year.
He'll take a gap year. I think.
Yeah,
I think that would probably be best. But the Phoenix thing is entirely implicated by the fact that they have. A new money Silicon Valley owner who seems to think that getting tips from Isaiah Thomas is the best way to go about building his franchise.
Common move among your lesser owners. Everybody really loves how available Zeke is.
The poor Phoenix Suns.
If you text him, he will text you back.
Yeah, he will. He's not waiting. He doesn't really have much else to do at this point. But like they went from the classic Donald Sterling, crusty, meddling, racist archetype to, yet another in a series of Mark Cuban, and neither one is a particularly desirable or successful owner archetype. I mean, there was a Woj story that was ran, which had the line, which is that Shabia is actively—he's taking an interest. You know, like Michael Lerner in Barton.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's taking an interest.
Yeah,
not what you want.
Yeah, I can't do a good Tony Shalhoub in that, but I'll spare everybody. But he's taking an interest in the team. And then once one of Woj's many sources, probably Ishivia himself, said, yeah, I don't want that in the article, they just stripped it right out with no editor's note or anything. Classic journalist best practices, or at least Woj best practices. But all the basketball knowers seem to think that he will have a hand in basketball matters. And to me, that is just historically, that's been a very bad sign for the long-term success of a franchise.
He's younger than me and Bob, for sure.
Yeah, like, definitely. He's in his 30s,
right?
Yeah. I was going to say, older than two people on this call, younger than two people on this call. So that's like the...
Did he play with Draymond at Michigan State, or did they not cross paths?
I think he was in like the Mateen Cleaves.
Yeah, he was. Okay. Yeah,
and not
either
the,
way.
Not
Draymond also, Green will be paying, the GM after he retires from the Phoenix Suns. Like that man is absolutely moving into the Phoenix Sun organization.
Real quick,
in some way.
Nick Ishbia is paying Mel Tucker $95 million guaranteed. So yeah, he might have to meddle in some basketball matters just to make sure all the coffers are filled.
But shout out to Mel Tucker, who was at Colorado and was just he gotten paid at Colorado, and he kept saying no. And then Michigan State was like, "How about now?" And he's like, "No. How about now? No. All right, here's an outrageous amount of money to save our football program from national embarrassment. Okay, that's fine. I'll go ahead and jump out in the worst possible time to start as a new head coach." Shout out to Mel Tucker. He did. He got the bag.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you can't really be, well, you could definitely be mad at him, actually, if you wanted to. But all right, so guys that that Matt Ishbia played with at Michigan State, Alan Anderson.
Okay.
Zebo for 1 year.
Oh.
College career, I'd completely forgotten about. Charlie Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Richardson. Wow. Which must have been, but none of these guys are the sort of things where you're going to tap into your network and like Kelvin Torbert is going to be your next coach or whatever. Like this is, it's a lot of like Big Ten guys that you sort of remember if you were watching basketball around them, but nothing. Yeah, this guy is a few years younger than me based on this. Oh, he played with Mo Pete and Mateen Cleaves.
Yeah.
So that's a good college NBA roster
right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's over 3 years, but that is a lot of recognizable dudes.
Can we also just say that Kevin Durant, who, look, I love Kevin Durant, top 10 player all time. He just continually makes these bad choices with one particular thing, which is Brooklyn actually is figuring stuff out. And you go and you make your move to Phoenix and it costs Mikal Bridges and you have to give up just enough where you can't win the West. And now you have Devin Booker as your running mate. And Devin Booker was awesome this playoffs. Like those two are awesome. Chris Paul, we're nearing the end. You're going to lock in Chris Paul next year, it looks like. DeAndre Ayton, that situation's not great. And you found yourself in another extremely talented team that is never going to have it all together to make a deep finals run and get back to the promised land. Like, I just feel bad. It's the same
pattern. I agree.
It's a pattern that he just can't get out of.
And I think it's probably just because he costs so much. I mean, the stuff that Phoenix had to trade to get Durant back in like anything like a fair deal is like the connective tissue that makes like a really good team into like a title contending team. You know, that it's like I think Mikal Bridges is great. I think he's Cam Johnson's had a much better NBA career than I would have guessed based on his college career. And he's like really is a good NBA player. But like if those guys are your fourth and fifth guys and you're in great shape. But like in order to like get Durant, you have to send them away and then you're replacing them with
Torrey Craig,
like Terrence Ross, and freely available types who not to say that like there couldn't be some sort of like late career breakout there or that they like figure out the best way to use TJ Warren or whatever. It's different dudes though. They're not as good.
They're the Clippers, right? From the Doc years where it's like the every year was like, is it Jamal Crawford who's the fifth man? Is it Paul Pierce? Yeah. Is it Wesley Johnson? Is it like they just did that song and dance every year and you're like, they figured out four. They can't. Yeah. They just aren't going to figure out the fifth, and it's going
to
cost them.
It's also like tough with, and this was where they, I think they kind of blew it in Brooklyn to a certain extent. Is that like there's this everybody that's a fan of a team, and I'm not a Brooklyn Nets fan, but I felt the same way. I'm not a Knicks fan either, and it was the same deal with the guys that they wound up trading for Melo, who's retired. That like the hard work of like building a team where it's like they're overperforming, you know, it's like younger players like sort of or guys that you were able to get at a discount because they were under valued one way or the other. Like those rosters are the ones that I think fans remember like super fondly, not to say that like Warriors fans obviously like they remember the championship teams like and love them, but like that We Believe team that like beat the Jazz, like that's the team that like if you're watching them you are, because they're giving you something that you're not expecting. And the Nets had built around D'Angelo Russell and then like that sort of like collection of role players. That team was like really spunky, really good, like tough eight seed that like wins one game. And like I grew up cheering for teams like that. And you don't want that to be the end of the story necessarily, but if you can keep that sort of core and then drop a superstar on top of it and make that work, like it sounds a lot easier than it is. Like you have to trade some of that to get the superstar. You have to let some of it go so that you can bring in the superstars buddies or whatever. And then it's like that little bit of like chemistry, once it becomes untenenable, like you're stuck with what Phoenix has, which is like a super good top heavy roster that I have no idea what they're going to do with.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're going to win. And you're just the Durant, and then we're going to be over because Durant, this is ending sooner rather than later of peak number one option on title team, Kevin Durant. And just the waste of the last five now, years is just a bummer because Kevin Durant is just, when he is healthy and at his best, you can make the case he's been the best basketball player in the league.
He's amazing, but he's in that like Jacob DeGrom stage too, where it's like he's not declining, he's just available for fewer and fewer games. Yeah. And so like that's tough. Like it's going to put you in a position as a team to have to like bet on a bunch of stuff that you have no control over, but where you're like, all right, well, if we get the, you know, the 30 games in a row where he's excellent. Like, we just, let's just put those at the end of the year. And like, you can't do that. You saw what happened to the Clippers this year, like all the load management shit that they tried. And it's like they ended the playoffs with their two best players not on the floor. So
yeah, maybe that's what the Rangers are doing. The Rangers are awesome because they're motivated to have Jacob DeGrom available come October. They're just like, we got to get him there. We just got to get to October and then Jacob will be ready.
Yeah,
there are two Mets fans in this podcast right now.
They are discounting how difficult it is to get Jacob DeGrom to do what you want him to do. Like, right. He's like, they have this idea that they're just sort of like, you have an injury and you need to sit. And he's going to be like, no, I don't. I fix it with my mind. Like,
yeah, he comes out, his warm-up psych-up music is Solitary Man. It's a bit of a tell. Yeah.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah. There's a great, I do have to go to a child's birthday party after this, so yes. I'll step off. But I wrote the Mets essay for the Baseball Prospectus book this year. They usually ask me to write about a team that they think would make me upset. And this year they picked the right one. They knew. And I went back and watched his first start with the Mets this year was like, or last year was, I'm getting texts from my wife being like, we have to go to a child's birthday party. They didn't go to commercial during it. They just had, like, they ran it, you know, him warming up and that song playing and the crowd sort of like cheering, but then just like kind of being nervous and watching him, you know, like it's just like that step down from cheering where you're just kind of like, I hope he doesn't like grab anything. Right. Mm. Yeah. And it was like, it's actually kind of like, I don't know that it would mean anything if you weren't a Mets fan, but it's like good filmmaking. Like, I found it kind of like moving in that way. And then, you know, that you don't usually find yourself moved during a sports game. But yeah, he wasn't around the way you wanted him at the end of the year either. But I don't know. Good luck to the Rangers. Thank you guys for having me. Sorry to be late. And
no, this is great. Like, this is a David Roth pop-in. You never, like, we like a good pop-in. Like,
I'm around.
Yeah.
I just have to be reminded of it. Chase had to, like, I remembered this last night and was like, oh my God. I'm supposed to be on the stream tomorrow, like 10 hours from now. But yeah, thank you for accommodating. I appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Defector.com. Go subscribe. See you, David.
Right. See y'all. Bye.
Bye, Dave.
Bye.
Well, there we go. That was David Roth.
To piggyback on the cinematic qualities of Jacob DeGrom's first start, I highly recommend, if you want to, a good Twitter follow is John DeMarsico. Mm. Who is the director of the SNY broadcast team.
Mm.
And he will, what he's been doing lately, one, the Mets do some really delightful, truly cinematic stuff with their broadcast, which is often a great thing because they're the Mets. So you kind of have to, you know, burnish the edges to get to distract from the actual product on the field. But the one thing he showed last week, which was just amazing, Pete Alonso hit a 3-run home run to win a game in extra innings. Mm. Yay. But what he showed was the shot from the SNY booth with all 16 camera angles.
Mm.
And so you see all of them in a giant, you know, Hollywood Squares type thing. And you listen to his call of how he put together the shot of Pete hitting the ball traveling out of the stadium, the fans reacting, him running around the bases, him going in the dugout, him doing high fives, the pitcher, and you just see him going, camera three, go, hold, camera six, ready, stand 16, stand 16, two ready, two, go, three ready, four ready, 12 ready, and it's just like, oh my God, it's like he's an air traffic controller. It is the amount of split-second decision-making that it takes to put together what is an excellent shot of a game-winning home run and an excellent, you know, clip of footage. It looks like it tells that story. But the decisions he's making while keeping track of 16 different shots of various parts of the entire stadium are amazing. It is an I'm just like, you have plugged into a deeper recess of a mind palace than I ever thought possible. You are the lawnmower man here, plugged into the direct source and just do. It's amazing. I was blown away. They actually managed during a Cubs game last week. Somehow the camera team got an exact replica of the shot in the movie The Natural, when Glenn Close, you know how Glenn Close, like when, because the Chicago game, the games in Chicago versus the New York Knights were shot in Wrigley Field. Mm-hmm. And there's a shot in the bleachers where Glenn Close is backlit so that from home plate, Robert Redford can't see, like stares up into the stands, sees the late evening glow, like the sunset glow, and Glenn Close is there framed in a halo of angelic light. And they got the exact same shot. Now, granted, they did not have Glenn Close in the stands, but it was...
It was Buck Showalter.
Yeah. It was actually Anna Benson, the saucy wife of former Mets and Pirates pitcher Chris Benson, who got in trouble for showing up in a too sexy Santa Claus outfit during the Mets Christmas Day thing. No, but they got a shot of... And it was, for except save for the lack of a Glenn Close, it was the exact image of that. And no one caught it. No one on, like, I don't know if anyone watching at home during the Mets game got it, or a small percentage of, like, movie freaks slash Mets fans got it. And I was like, wow, that was amazing. That was beautiful. Amazing stuff. Anyway, John DeMarsico, Twitter.com. Really, if you want a little peek behind the curtain and see how an MLB broadcast is made, that's a legitimately good Twitter follow to take.
And it's a non-Bally Sports broadcast, so no, I'm all for it. I hate having a Bally Sports a team on Bally Sports because it's just so cookie.
I have multiple
butter.
Teams on Bally Sports. I think everybody,
so you hate it more than me.
I was going to say, yeah, like everything I watch just about locally.
I've said this before. I was very worried when the Mets were dithering about renegotiating Keith Hernandez's contract, because SNY, like when the Wilpons sold the Mets, he held on to his cable network. Mm. So Papa Steve does not own SNY. The Wilpons still own SNY. So the Wilpons, who are not famed for... who lost a lot of money to Bernie Madoff and are not famed for spending it when they don't have to. I was worried because honestly, if I could not watch the Mets broadcast with Gary, Keith and Ron, I would become significantly less invested in Mets games. That's the scout's honor. God's honest truth.
There you go. Last thing before we wrap up here, fellas, the Washington Commanders might have to change their name again. They got their trademark.
Because of a wacky trademark law. Do it again. Change it again.
I think I'm on that team. I think you can change it again. Who cares?
Change it.
Washington Football Club.
No.
Washington Football Club.
Washington Football. Washington Team Football. Call themselves the F's.
I like the Red Wolves. The Red Wolves was good.
Red Wolves, Red Tails.
Red Tails is also awesome. Like, yeah. I don't know why they went away from that. The thing that it seems like people only care about is the red and yellow, or garnet and yellow. Like, as long as that color scheme's...
Burgundy and gold. Burgundy. Yeah, you're right, because, yeah. Garnet. Any Washington fan will tell you, burgundy and gold.
Maroon.
It doesn't matter, right? Like, but I do think it's hilarious. Then that's the most Washington thing possible, is they did all of this and it's like, oh, also you didn't do the homework and now you're gonna have to change it again. Like,
who's the original owner? Is it a lacrosse team or something like that?
Well, there's two. So there's some guy who like bought a what was the guy? I forgot the
He was squatting on all
Yes,
of the,
there's a guy squatting on it.
But and I then, thought they settled with him though.
I don't think they've settled, but I think he's open to settling, if I remember correctly reading it.
Ah, okay. Because I remember hearing about, because it's the same guy who like basically was like, oh, I'm going to get on the ground floor on this. Mm-hmm. And then I thought they had settled with him. But apparently, as you say,
the uniforms are bad and they should fix them. So if they change the name, I mean, it takes evidently the marketing whizzes who employed by NFL teams and the design geniuses, it takes 2 years to come up with a new uniform palette. Who just announced new, some, which NFL, I completely blew it. Some NFL team is rolling out new uniforms.
Eagles are supposed to
they're going to have the Kelly Green throwbacks. The Arizona did the Ohio State practice uniform. With an angrier bird.
It's like they're trying to go back to their
They look like Louisville. They look like Louisville now.
Louisville's got better uniforms.
Yeah.
I'm very much wanting my New York football Jets to change their uniform because it looks like
I don't like them. They look like a Canadian CFL. Football League uniform. Yeah.
They're real Saskatchewan Rough Riders hours there for the Jets.
How did they not just keep the – I would like for them to go back to the – because I know that they have the look, or they had the look in the late 90s into the 2010s.
Yeah. I want it to be Kelly Green.
Just tweak that color to a Kelly Green, it's perfect. But
there was a really – janky XFL type uniform that got leaked right before they made the decision, and it had a numbers. It was bad, but it was bad in an interesting way. Instead of them looking like Marshall, and I was all for it. It ended up not being. They had a helmet logo that were these black jet wings that looked like the Eagles helmet. And yeah. I honestly, it was one of those that's so awful, I really like it. But I honestly think the biggest problem is that they've gone with this, they have a bespoke color all their own, which they call Gotham Green. And I like the emerald quality of the helmet, but I want an actual Kelly, gosh darn, green.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, though.
If they had kept the... I like the 80s and 90s Jets word mark.
Yeah, it's a very 80s word mark.
If they had gone with that, if they just gone with that word mark or modernized it,
Woody Johnson has sort of hinted at the fact that they'll have a throwback at one point.
Because
the fans want, like, Fireman Ed clearly wants it. He's got a stack of Bruce Harper jerseys in the closet that he really wants to bring out.
And I think they should do this. I would do this Thanksgiving weekend. Everybody, you just have a throwback weekend.
The 94, I loved the 94 year when Diamond anniversary when everyone wore throwbacks.
Because half those jerseys look like crap.
Yeah, but I like that they look like crap. I like really crappy looking jerseys. To me, that's interesting.
Like, I think a lot of it's just so weird. You think
clarify, there's a difference between bad and crappy. The Commanders have a bad uniform,
uh-huh.
A crappy uniform that just makes people go, "What are you wearing?" To me, that is always interesting. Like that one year during the Randall Cunningham years when the Eagles wore light blue and yellow.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Oh, no, Michael Vick.
Oh, Michael Vick. It was the Michael Vick year. Yeah. The Michael Vick comeback year
when they wore the late 30s, early 40s uniforms. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Jets did that with a navy blue and gold.
Their AFL uniform.
They wore the Titans uniforms for a number of years.
And I didn't hate them.
Navy blue and gold, as Notre Dame fans will tell you, is a solid color combination. It's hard to mess it up. And so it's just a navy blue and gold uniform.
It's just not the Jets. It was like, who am I watching right now?
Right.
Like, it's just not the Jets. The best uniforms were the Curtis Martin ones. The Curtis Martin Jets uniforms were the best ones.
The problem is you can't do complex shoulder stripes with a modern NFL uniform tablet because
it's too busy up here now.
Yeah, the fabric, and you can't. Because the point of the UCLA stripe is that it goes it's a complete circumference of the shoulder, and you cannot do that with the Nike or even the previous uniform template.
Huh.
You cannot. The template does not allow, or you could, but you'd have to sort of jerry rig away so
you
it goes
can
around.
Do it,
but so... you can't because so many players have just uniforms that just barely covers the pad and then tucks under and they wear it. So you cannot. That's why Carolina tried to do that by having a stripe that ends in a point, but it still doesn't work. So,
and it worked with a guy like Jake Delhomme. It worked because he had the long sleeves.
Right.
So does Aaron Rodgers.
And so they tried to fix that by having intricate patterns that aren't a circumference, and you get those, for example, like the Seattle uniforms with like the Nicotini that's like jammed in the middle of it, and none of it works. Which is why I think it's actually smart that teams are getting rid of the TV numbers that used to be on the show, like on the b- both on the actual shoulder itself and then move to the top of the pad. But nobody needs to see those now because TV technology has reached the point where it's like, well, how am I going to know who these guys are if they don't have a number on their sleeve?
You don't actually need it. You really don't need the TV numbers anymore.
Right. No, they're useless, and there are better design things you can do with that space. Speaking as an esthetician, that is a space to be mined.
The commander's thing, and I'll say it real quick just to like clarify. So Florio wrote, the reason for the denial was, one, the existence of a trademark for Commander's Classic, and that's the Air Force Army game, and then pending applications filed by a man in the D.C. area. Also, Martin McCauley's filed trademarks for, and this is the guy that he's talking about, Washington Space Commanders and Washington Wolf Commanders at a time when he was trying to squat on the team's potential new name. It doesn't end the issue, as Gerben explains, the team can fight the matter and it can attempt to work out a deal to use the name. McCauley has already said that he'll surrender anything he owns to the team. That's something he has been saying for several years now. So, just hilarious. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to guess they change it. Like, Josh Harris, you might as well. Like, it's not, I don't think any Washington fans would be upset at all or care for the least bit of like, oh, it's already outdated. Like, what about the, who was buying Commander's merch in droves over the last year for in the DC area? Who was actually doing that?
Sam Howell's family.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, it is kind of hilarious that when you watch a Commander's game, you still see people in jerseys of the team formerly known as, or the Washington Football Club, and you're just like,
you already have hogs anyway, so just do Razorbacks. Why not just do the Razorbacks?
Or do the, you know, the
Red Hogs.
Air Hogs.
Red Hogs. Yeah.
Red Hogs, Air Hogs. Like,
don't overcomplicate this.
Yeah.
I mean, just
Red Tails is cool. You get the tail logo back on the helmet, which everybody likes, and avoids.
There's a military aspect too, because, you know, the NFL just loves.
Right. That's the whole. Speaking of which, just for a last note, the hilarious thing about these mass boycotts of Target and Bud Light and any and all product that is, you know, that that does the merest gesture to recognize that in fact gay people exist in the world is
screw inclusion. How dare you?
The point is fascism. The point is to create a self-contained community where you don't have to encounter the outside world. It's cult behavior. It's also the point is to drive gay people out of public life. But aside from that, as a sports fan, for the last, I'm going to say four decades at least, there has been an official endorsement in one form or another in the last like 20 years, but so post 9/11, there has been very, very clear attempts, including actual cash handed over by the U.S. government, to make it clear that the pro sports leagues support the armed forces to sell a militaristic version of the world. If that's not political, I don't know what is. And I've written blogs, I've written columns, I've written articles talking about how I think this is bad, but like, it hasn't stopped me from watching a single sporting event once. And I would never think of saying, well, okay, here's where we roll out the 100-yard sized flag now during the game. And here's where Blue Angels do a flyover. And I'm like, okay, I don't need to see the military industrial complex being sold during this. I find it at best annoying, but I would never think, okay, well, that's it. Sports have gone fash now and I can't participate.
You mean you don't like flyovers for games involving 2 4-win teams in November?
Yeah, it irks me. But I mean, the idea that it's baffling to me, the idea that would cause a, like, that if you are a person who likes watching games, and I am one, I watch, you know, I consume a lot of NFL football, tons of basketball, and a great deal of baseball. And the idea that corporate entities' politics, as they were, because they're not really politics, it's just marketing. The idea that companies, the marketing efforts would be so offensive as to cause me to reject it. It's not something I've ever really seriously considered. And I mean, you can say that I lack conviction, but come on, man. The game's great. There's a whole, like, there. It's to me that I'm just like, you know, we on the left have dealt with a certain political ethos being, as they like to say on the right, shoved down our throats for the longest time. And you know what? You suck it up, or you go to the can when that part of the game is on, or you grab a beer, or you just say, okay, this is not for me. It's for somebody else. But I recognize that there is a segment of the population that takes a great deal of pride in that, that loves the military appreciation nights and that feels it's important. And if it's important for them, okay. I think they're wrong, but that's just me thinking other people are wrong, which is a thing that happens a lot. I don't begrudge the people for whom it's important or think that they're somehow that they're harming me and they're destroying my way of life in some way. It's not personal. So there's today's brief political commentary and, you know, end rant.
There you go. Andrew, AL.com. Go subscribe today. What can the good folks check out from you and the team over there this week?
We have got both Auburn and Alabama and the college, well, NCAA baseball tournament. Most likely both of them will be hosting. So there's going to be a lot of good content there. But yeah, this is like kind
of.
Say
men or women's?
Men's. The women are.
Wait, hold on. Alabama's not hosting.
Yeah.
You think Alabama and Auburn are going to be hosting?
They are. So I've spent this week at the SEC baseball tournament, which
I don't need to talk about that.
If you're okay, Chase, just close your mouth or go watch Matlock or something. If you are a sports fan, you have to put this tournament on your list.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great atmosphere because you're generally seeing matchups, whether they be in the first round or the first round of play or even into the second round. You're seeing NCAA tournament / super regional / Omaha quality matchups, you know, every game. So it's really, really good to see. And yeah, Chase, sorry, Tennessee. There was a play that happened in that game real quick where a player hit the ball and the weather – was like the ground was so damp that generally it would have probably maybe possibly dribbled out to the fringe of the infield, but the ball just died and it just stayed in front of home plate, which constitutes as a hit. And it was just like, yeah, this ain't Tennessee's day.
Okay. They're going to be the best number two regional team, probably Indiana State or something. And they're
honestly,
the best odds to win the College World Series. Things are good.
I could see them sliding into a host spot because I was just looking at the projections and some teams have slid down. So if Indiana State loses, which I think that's something we've got to pay attention to. If you're a Tennessee fan, that's something you got to pay attention to.
Yeah,
because
I think that's where they're going. Based on every projection I've seen, it seems like that's where they're most likely to end up.
It's weird because a lot of spots where they could go as a two seed, they can't because literally there's an SEC team there. I mean, that's just how good the conference has been. But yeah, there is because I put Auburn maybe hosts. Auburn fans were quickly to tell me that their metrics are good enough for them to host, which I will give them. They are, but it's also kind of like there's an SEC logo on your uniform. If you were in a different conference and had these measurements, you were absolutely a two seed. Both Alabama and Auburn are hosting. We will most likely hosting. We will know later on tonight. But yeah, this is supposed to be our calm period of the week. But actually, technically, it's not because College Football Minute real quick. SEC meetings this week. We will figure out a schedule format most likely. Oh, you say no.
I don't think so. It's pretty ugly right now from what I've heard because they're going to have to eat a bunch of money to dump a lot of games, non-conference games. I think it's going to drag on.
If they go
to 8 or go to 9, they're going to have to drop a lot.
If they go 9, which
is what they should do.
To go 9. Thank you, Chase. You're on the right
side. Yeah, no, they should, because if they go eight, it's going to piss so many fans off.
I think they're the decision makers are fine with nine.
Yeah.
They just know that whatever they're doing now, it may be temporary because Oklahoma and Texas don't have any voting power right now. They'll be there, but they don't have any voting power. But they may vote in the best interest of when we circle back to this in 2 years, when we do have voting power, what's going to happen? So it may be at nine, but I would not be surprised if it's just for 2 years.
Yeah. Bobby Silverman, Daily Beast, anything new you want to plug this week? Dailybeast.com?
No.
Nothing new? Something in the works?
No. Yeah.
Ooh.
For now, no.
I like it. All right.
Later.
Bob Silverman, Andrew Hammond, always a pleasure, and I will talk to you all next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.